Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keist LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. I'd like to welcome our guest, Kimberly Clark. Welcome, Kimberly.
Hi, thank you, Jan. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
It is such a pleasure to have you here and to get to talk about your career and your career resilience, because I think you've had such an interesting career. So we're going to talk about what you do for a living, the fact that you're an entrepreneur, a true entrepreneur. You know, you've said we can chat about what it's like to lose a very big client and how that hits a business. I'd also like to chat with you about hiring staff and so on. So we've got lots of interesting things that we're going to get into today. So let's start with what you do, what your business is.
Sure. Yeah, we run a global events agency, Jan. So what that means is we support our clients who are in business-to-business companies primarily. And our core competency is event operations, which is really saying we're, you know, behind the scenes planning, organizing, executing your event. Our niche is in VIP hospitality and C-suite programs. So that's really what we're known for worldwide, our white glove service with the C-level executives and the work that we do.
And do you actually call it white glove service?
We sure do. Yeah, it gets lots of different nicknames, yeah. But I think we're most well known for our white glove service in terms of how we really strategize, how we plan, and how we execute these very high profile, high stakes, high budget events with some pretty, you know, key business figures around the world.
Right. And start me back with how you got into this business.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a really, really long story, but I'll give you the short version. I actually launched my business 18 years ago. And I initially was positioned as a marketing consultant. So what I thought my service offering was, you know, consulting to businesses perhaps that didn't have an in-house marketing team, but also wouldn't necessarily need the full support of an agency. So I was, you know, trying to be that part-time marketing resource. But what I quickly found, my solution to every marketing problem was an event. An in-person event. We need to get everybody together. We need an event. We need a dinner. We need a meeting. We need a conference. So, you know, within the first 12 months that I had launched the business, I had three key clients, and I was pretty much, you know, marketing them using events. And so that's how I launched. And honestly, my business has always been referral based. I've never done any marketing. I've rarely done any proactive sales outreach. It's needed from time to time, but for the most part, it's all word of mouth and referral based. So, okay. You know, that's how it really grew.
Was your background in marketing, like your educational background, I mean?
Oh, well, not really. In fact, fun fact, I failed marketing in university, which is that I was going through a tough time. I lost my father at that time, but no, my education was in sociology. So I guess I thought maybe I was going to be a sociologist, but I, you know, I'm a people person. I'm a relationship person. I did take marketing in school. I didn't love it in theory, but in practice, of course, it's my passion now.
So at what point did you really staff up?
So I landed a major, what they call a big tech company, a global big tech company, probably within the first 24 months of being in operation. And at that point, you know, it was myself. I had a couple coordinators in the background supporting me. But from time to time, I heard their leadership or my key contact say, you know, can we clone you? Are there more of you out there? And I said, well, you know, of course we can. And for me, it was just a matter of, you know, going out and hiring. So probably within 24 months of the business is when I really started to recognize, hey, there's an opportunity within this key client of mine that if I could, you know, expand, if I could scale up, that we could deliver more services to them and really wrap our arms around all of their business.
How did it feel though? Because there you are in complete control, and then you start taking a little bit of control that you have and putting it on others. How did that feel?
Yeah, it wasn't natural for me, that's for sure, in the beginning. I really had to learn, and I had to practice letting go. I had to learn how to trust, and I also had to learn how to communicate so I could gain that trust in terms of understanding, you know, what are appropriate check-ins, what are the types of language I need to use with my team members to really give me the confidence that they've got it, that they're representing the company in the right way, that they're representing our brand properly. So is it certainly a learning process for me?
So where did you draw the kind of people that were important to you to have on your team?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really, you know, for me, I still feel that, you know, you can teach people the business, you can teach people events, you can teach people this is how we do it. But having the right fit culturally and having the heart and having the passion is really what we would hire for. So where we would go and get that, honestly, one of my first hires was out of the hospitality and service industry. She was just a remarkable person that I had met. She was a server, to be honest, in a restaurant. Okay. And her service delivery was outstanding, and her passion, her loyalty, her accountability. And that's really the type of culture that we have here. Yes. So that's where we go is oftentimes it's me bumping into somebody, getting to know somebody and saying, wow, you've got something special, right? And, it's not necessarily the educational programs that we go to. We're not opposed to that. Yeah. But it really is, you know, we certainly build and cultivate a network of potential team members, just like we do, you know, with potential sales. So we know we're going to need potential people to run those programs. Right. So it's nurturing that network.
Mm-hmm. So in the 18 years that you've been involved in this business, have you seen the education side grow, Kimberly? Have there been a lot more programs, a lot more graduates from actual education programs?
Yes, and they're getting more and more specific, which is interesting too. So, you know, even especially in Europe, they offer some really outstanding, VIP hospitality and concierge programs, which is interesting when you think about that high level of white glove service that we deliver. So I've seen that expand. The piece that I find is interesting that I don't see enough graduates of is just, you know, the communications programs, right? So communications for us is at the heart of what we do. Right. So you have a client, you're producing an event for them. There's so many facets of communication we have to take them through. You know, we have to deliver bad news from time to time. We have to get them on board with our vision for a program. So how do you say, you know, here's what I'm imagining? You know, so it's interesting. I'm not seeing as many folks come out of communications programs, which we cherish.
Your reach is global. What parts of the world have you traveled to put on events?
Yes. And surprisingly, we don't do much in Canada at all. Although having said that, in pandemic times, I sense we will be doing a bit more here as some of our Canadian clients don't travel as far as much. So my reach has been, Singapore, Hong Kong, Beijing. I've done so much in Europe, Barcelona, Madrid, the London, UK is somewhere I travel frequently in non-pandemic times. I was probably there once every 6 to 8 weeks. A frequent travel to New York and San Francisco. Those are a couple of hotspots. We do programs, of course, so incentive trips, those reward trips. So we worked in the Caribbean a lot, Mexico, the Caribbean, Cabo, places like that. So between myself and my team, we've been all over the world.
You know what? You sound like someone who's really proud of their team. And that is so nice to hear, because that's such a big part of it, isn't it? To have a team that you actually are a team, not sort of I'm the head and therefore everything I say is gospel and so on.
No, yeah, that's not my operating style. It's I am extremely proud of my team, and not only proud, I am so grateful. I'm a pretty grateful person. I do, you know, I practice mindfulness, and I think I'm often, you know, most thankful every day that I wake up and have such a strong team, such a loyal team. Mm-hmm. And they amaze me. They inspire me and they motivate me.
Yeah.
It is not my management style to say, this is how we'll do it. In fact, I'm very happy to let them lead. I'm very happy to let them, you know, really guide me on how they think things should go. Mm-hmm. And even in our structure, I can tell you, nobody reports to me. In fact, we have a leadership, leadership team, and, you know, technically the COO reports to me, but I joke and say that I report to her. She's got me right where she needs me. But no, in all honesty, I don't need to be the end all be all at the center of it. In fact, I recognize that the talent that's around me is remarkable.
Kimberly, have you got a funny story that you can share with us from maybe a disaster that might have happened when you did an event, or just something that's really interesting?
Gosh, we've dealt with it all, Jan, from our speakers showing up with no luggage. So, you know, the middle of the night, we're out, trying to land them a suit to be able to go on stage, or convince them that you'll be fine in your jeans and your t-shirt on stage. We'll grab you a jacket. I think one of my favorite solves for that, a quick one, is our host hotel was a Four Seasons. And so I quickly went to the staff at the Four Seasons, and I looked at the size of the fellow at the concierge, and I'm like, your jacket will do. Hand it over. I need it for the next couple hours. I'll get it right back to you. Take your name badge off. So, you know, we get pretty innovative on how we solve for problems. I think, you know, one of the things I can say that I'm grateful for is, we work very closely with a partner organization of ours. It's out of Europe, out of the UK, actually, who's in crisis management and risk assessment. So if ever we find ourselves in a situation that's quite serious, where there's risk or there's, you know, an impending crisis, very fortunate to have these folks to be able to pull together our crisis management team, mm-hmm. identify, you know, the proper steps to resolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to turn for a few minutes now to career resilience. This is your business. This is your baby. There's no question about that. And yes. You're the reason that this business is going. So tell me what it was like when you lost your biggest client. How did that go?
It was really awful. We had intentionally built our business within this one client. It wasn't like I was naively going about it and didn't realize, oh gosh, we have all our eggs in one basket.
Okay.
They were 80% of our revenue in 2015.
Wow.
And we received the news on February 16th of 2016 that they were going in another direction and we would no longer be working together. It was the result of, basically a power struggle between a couple of executives, global executives, and we got caught in the middle. Right. Ourselves and a number of other agencies were delisted at that time. I was gutted. We worked within so many business units of that particular company that I knew eventually we wouldn't work together, but I thought it would be over time. I thought I'd be able to see it coming. So to have it happen all at once was, it gutted me. I thought we were done for. I thought that was the end of it. I mean, listen, it's 80% of my revenue. And yeah. I thought that's it. That's the business is folding. I probably spent too much time trying to fix it, right? I thought I had control. I thought I could, I can fix this. This is a mistake. This isn't happening to us. It shouldn't happen. So before I really accepted it, dealt with it, and moved on, I spent too much time looking backwards. So that was unfortunate, as I call it now, maybe wasted time. Really, how? Like I kept asking myself, how am I going to go forward? How can I do this? And I can't do this. That's the thing that kept coming to mind. I can't do this. I can't. I don't have it. I just felt like I couldn't. But obviously here we are today and fortunately one foot in front of the other.
How did you get out of that feeling of I can't do this?
I will say, so I'm a pretty authentic person I'm a crier, I'm a feeler. So I spent a lot of time down in the dumps, just really depressed and feeling that I didn't have it. I didn't have control. And what I can honestly say is I don't think it was me, my network, some unbelievable individuals. So many people, you know, came to our aid and came to my help. But there were a few in particular, I can count them on one hand, that, you know, really gave me the message that said, you know, we're not going to let you fail. We're going to help you. And those folks really kind of picked me up and dusted me off and said, yeah, you have an amazing offering. You have an incredible team. Go out there and get some new business. And again, as I said, Jan, all our business have been referral based within mostly one company.
Yes.
So how to go out and build business was, I was baffled. Oh, how do I do that? What does one do? And then, you know, I quickly realized that, gosh, working in the C-suite as I have, I've made a number of tremendous relationships, and that's really my strength and my asset. So when I went to some of these executives I'd worked with in the past that had moved on to other companies and explained what had happened to us, you know, and I literally reached out for help. I said, if you can see any way that you can help, the immediate reaction was, A, of course I'll help, Casey, how can I? And secondly was, wait a minute, you're available for hire? We thought you were, you know, exclusive to this other company. So it was really a matter of one foot in front of the other. And I have to thank, you know, a really strong network of business executives around me and folks around me that kind of picked me up and dusted me off and pointed me in the right direction.
So what period of time was that? I mean, obviously the day it happened is very in your brain, the February date. What period of time did you spend mourning and then regrouping?
Yeah, I would say it was probably, I'm going to guess here, it was probably 2 to 3 weeks that I was doing the mourning and feeling like I can't and feeling like this is it. Yeah. And then probably within the 3rd to 4th week, I started to just, okay, one step at a time, you know, set up a meeting here, have a meeting there. You know, all the while, you know, my greatest, you know, asset as well. I'm so fortunate to have my COO, who I call my guardian angel. You know, she's over there crunching numbers. She's looking at cash flow. She's projecting. So she's also really helping me move forward and be positive and say, hey, look, this is, we've got cash to manage. So you go out there and get some more revenue. So that probably started within the 4th week. We were fortunate in that with working with this client, there was a wind down period. So we had some revenue to count on. So while that was coming in, my team was executing those programs. I went out and worked on building my network and building new relationships and building the business. And, you know, by the end of 2016, as our business together wound down and we were onboarding new clients, I was really getting into it. I was like, this business development thing is fun. I'm decent at it. And I think that the happy part about that story is, Jan, if I were to show you our financials now and say, hey, can you pick out the year that we lost our biggest client? Mm-hmm. You won't be able to tell.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that one of the things that I get out of the story that you've just told is that worst disaster can open so many doors.
Absolutely. You know, I'm all about, and from that learning experience, never let a crisis go to waste. There's something in this, right? So that's really what I took from that, because now, honestly, and I that happened 2016, and right away in 2017, I started saying it was the best thing that ever happened to us. I mean, it was unfortunate. I never wish it upon anybody. Yes. But for us, it was the best thing. We now have, you know, we're more profitable. Our revenues doubled within 3 years. Mm-hmm. Our margins are stronger. We have a diverse client base now. This, you know, this won't happen to us again. Yeah. But I think the thing I'm most proud of and I'm most thrilled about is our morale is higher than it's ever been.
Yes.
Our team is really enjoying working with the different clients that we work with, and we're selective in who we choose to work with. And so we've chosen very carefully to work with those that give us a positive energy.
Well, you get to be selective when you're at your level of success, and that's a great thing to be. But if you were thinking of a tip that you wanted to pass on to an entrepreneur who's starting out or to you 18 years ago, what would that tip be?
Really, you choose to do the things that you love. You love what you do and the rest will follow. If you truly love your work, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's what I'm very fortunate to be in this business. I love it. I also recognize where my strengths are and where my challenges are. And so I have no trouble passing off, you know, the operations, the finance and the operations of KCI Management to my COO. That's her strength. She Yes. runs the business. She doesn't have any client involvement. Whereas my role is very much about the relationships, very much about, you know, the people, the planning, the strategy. Mm-hmm. So my whole thing comes down to, you know, my advice would always be true to your passion. If you love what you're doing, the goodness will come.
Yeah, I like that. I just wanted to switch to never let a good disaster go. How have you coped with COVID?
Oh my gosh. Well, if we thought losing our biggest client in 2016 Yes. was the worst thing that could happen to us, you know, here we are 4 years later. And now I call that losing our biggest client was Navy SEAL training for a pandemic in the events business, honestly. You know, I do really feel that helped prepare us. I think it was all part of the path that I was meant to go down because we knew what to do. When this pandemic hit in early March for us, we knew exactly what to do operationally to be able to survive. And again, thank goodness for my strong COO, her keen eye on the numbers and really watching our financials. So what did we do? How did we do? I mean, very quickly, we see the opportunity. Right? So it's springtime when this hit, mid-March 2020. First half of the year is always busiest for us, Jan. That's where we, Yes. we run most of our bigger programs in the first half of the year. So we're halfway through the planning cycle of many of them. And we were so fortunate that we were able to work with our clients and convert them, transition them over to digital events. What did we know about producing and delivering digital events? Not a ton. But what we did know is we can leverage the same skill set. It's still an event. There's still a date. There's still the work back schedule. There's an attendee experience. You know, you've got content. You've got an audience. Let's do it.
Yes.
So really quickly, in fact, it was Saturday, the 14th of March, we launched KCI Virtual Experience for online events. So went to our client base, let them know this is what we're doing. We're also honest with them to say, look, this is new to all of us. Mm-hmm. I'm not pretending to be an expert at this digital experience, but we're going to work with you and we're going to make sure your attendees have you know, a meaningful interaction with your company. So
when you're ready to go back to on-site events, you're ready for that. And when if more digital events are the ones that people want to go with, you're ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, we honestly, Jan, we predict that you know, this digital experience is here to stay. You know, yeah, perhaps I think what we'll probably see is a move to hybrid events, right? And then eventually in person again. But our approach right now and for the foreseeable future is we lead with the digital approach. Even I would join peer-to-peer roundtables and you know, I remember somebody reaching out to me after saying, you know, you've got this all figured out. Like, can you help us? It's technically a competitor of mine. And then, so I started to set up, you know, what I call friends helping friends session. I you know, tried to share with them, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's what we've found. Here are the 75 platforms we've evaluated. By sharing that information in my industry, I thought it was important. You know, I want to see our industry do well.
Yeah, good for you. I cannot end without asking you about Davos, the World Economic Forum, which is so famous, even if you're not in your world and so on. We all know Davos and the, you know, the actors, the celebrities, the politicians. What is Davos like?
You forgot to say the parties, Jan. The parties.
Oh, the parties. I'm such a worker.
Oh, the parties, yes. Davos is really a remarkable experience. It's probably the one I'll miss the most in 2021, for sure. You know, so it's they've chose Davos because there's one road in and one road out. It's very secure. And you go through multiple checkpoints. I mean, there's armed guards as you're going up the mountain, either on the train or in a car service. There's more helicopters that in one, you know, space than you'll ever see. And yeah, it's heads of state, it's heads of country, heads of business, as you said, celebrities, and they're just everywhere. And it's not it's not an environment where you would ever approach them or yeah. There's no fanfare for them. Everybody's a big deal there. Yeah. So it's fascinating to be in this remote town in the mountains, almost this, throwback too. Davos is not a high end over the top, glitzy town. It's almost even decorated. A lot of the hotels and venues are back in the 80s, but anyway, there's one main street. All of the vendors move out of the main street and these, big companies take over and they put their activations in these storefronts. So there may be content delivered in there. There may be one-on-one business meetings. And then at night it's, who's got the biggest party, who's got the performer, who's got the celebrities, that kind of thing. And it's the funniest thing. People show up in, I'm talking turtlenecks and jeans, right? It's a ski town. So, they lose the tie, lose the business suit, and everybody's there to network. Everybody is there to meet someone else. It's really that, although you've got, this very high-powered crowd, it's very friendly in that people want to meet each other. So it's late nights for us. The parties just barely end, and then people are off to the content sessions the next morning. But it's fascinating. It's really interesting to be around all that content and see folks, working towards solving world problems.
Kimberly, I have to ask you, and it's probably not a fair question, but were there two or three people that you were just in awe of seeing at Davos?
Oh yeah, there are so many, Jan. Honestly, the World Economic Forum has a stream for young social entrepreneurs as well. So I think I'm often in awe of these young people that come through that are truly going to be changing the world. Mm-hmm. But to call out one, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Matt Damon. We worked with him on a client activation 1 year, and he's just such a kind gentleman. He's so down to earth, lovely to work with. And he was there representing his organization called water.org, which is about getting clean water to areas where they don't necessarily have that access. And he was just lovely to work with, conversational, chatted with you like, he really was interested in knowing who you are and really genuine and authentic person. So I loved working with him.
And I think it's so great when people like that, who are for our world in a stratosphere, give back by doing something like water.org. That's just amazing. And that's the perfect person to pick. Thank you for that. I just think, it's so fascinating to see, Kimberly, what you have built from not knowing you were going to build it. And so proud of the fact that you're a Canadian in London, Ontario, and you've got this huge global reach. And I'm just in awe of the things that you have accomplished. So well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel very fortunate. I'm so privileged to be in this business and doing what I love. It's a hard time right now. There's no question. This is not easy for me to be in this business during the pandemic, and we're making the best of it. But I'm certainly looking forward to getting back to in-person events and getting back to my travels. I miss the travel, I miss people, and I miss places. So hopefully we can get this pandemic behind us and onwards.
Yeah, and we will, and you will. So
yes.
Kimberly, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jan, for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And to our viewers and listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation between Kimberly and myself. It's been fascinating and it felt so global. So thank you very much for listening to us today and viewing us today. And until we meet again.